Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. My name is Mark Snyder. We are going to look at the book called The Might of Thoughts. This morning, I got a wonderful day off on my birthday. So here we are at 10:30 a.m. doing a show on Blog Talk, which is unusual. And it's been a real interesting ride lately in my life. I've been going through a time when having covered the ideas in The Might of Thoughts has been very helpful. And there's a series of concepts that go from about page 200 to probably even past page 230 where you can start to get some principles out of the book that are very, very helpful. So let me just run five of these principles that Billy talks about past you. And this will change, you know, when you feel your thoughts becoming negative, when you feel yourself slide into the abyss of life, tell yourself, I am confident. I am optimistic. I am cheerful. I am relaxed. I am enthusiastic. And I'm thankful. If you can say these things out loud, you can break that flow of unhealthy thinking. And it's interesting, optimism is one of the things I mentioned there. Optimism is a quality which fascinates all human beings and which every single human being would certainly like to call his own. The human being that is optimistic in unusual circumstances and situations has a power in his life that will enchant his life. So what we're doing here is we're learning to think in a neutral, positive way because our thoughts create the circumstances of our life. It's the thoughts that lead to the feelings. The feelings grow from the thoughts. The feelings help to form our habits. And good habits will eventually lead to good circumstances in your life. You are in charge of the circumstances of your life. You are not a victim of circumstances. Your thoughts have an incredible power. And the ability to control those thoughts and to guide those thoughts into the way that you want is extremely important. Because we're at a time and an age where we all need as a society to start to move forward in the evolution of our consciousness. You know, Billy's writings are pretty amazing. They tell us many, many things, particularly about how the universe works. And everyone that's listened to this show has an important role to play in the next 800 years when we make the transition from where we are now to a society that's on a healthy path, a healthy, sustainable path. So never underestimate the importance of your life and the importance of the power of your thinking. See, optimistic behavior enables a human being to see and acknowledge the clear truth, even in the rottenest situation. Now, an optimist isn't a clown. He isn't a comical figure. It's the person who is, when they're under the greatest pressure, remains hopeful and happy. So focus on trying to be an optimist. Now, it's important to remember that there's a negative and a positive. The negative and the positive, these are two powers which belong together. And whenever any situation occurs, try to remember that the negative and the positive go together. If you focus on just the positive or just the negative, You're going to lose control of your good human nature. That's called Erschöpfung in the German. So you have to use both powers, both the negative and the positive. And if you only turn towards one of these factors, then you will fall very badly out of control of the good human nature. This is why neutral positive equalized thinking means that both the negative as well as the positive must be included in the thought patterns. And you need to nurture your thought patterns. You need to recognize when you have a good thought and clarify that thought and replay that good thought. If there's something that you're not as good at as you want to be yet, and you're maybe even not good at it, you're struggling, you've got to tell yourself you're confident and break that anxiety. Don't go into vexation. Tell yourself you're optimistic, and then you get control back of your life. Tell yourself, I am confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful. And then you can start to steer your thoughts. Now, where does this information come from? It comes from a man named Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer, who's an 80-year-old man who lives in Switzerland. He lives in a tiny mountain village that's called Hinterschmidruti. It's about 45 minutes to an hour from Zurich. He lives nestled in a pine forest in northern Switzerland in the mountains. And since a very young age, he's been very influenced by his surroundings and nature, and particularly one extraterrestrial man named Svath, who saved Billy's life when he was 6 months old. And Svath became Billy's first mentor. And Svath taught things to Billy that were very important. Taught Billy about the spiritual teachings and the intention of the spiritual teachings to wake the human race out of their sleep. And eventually these teachings will bring a worldwide movement that will bring peace, love, and freedom to the human beings of the world. Svath also taught Billy how to get information or receive information from a spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. So Billy started to learn at an incredible rate. And that's another thing that all of us, our goal in life, the purpose of our life is the evolution of our consciousness. And the evolution of our consciousness requires us to learn. And one of the things that we need to learn about is reincarnation, the universal consciousness. Now, we are very steeped in religion today, and the religions of the world have really stunted our growth, and it's taken away our freedom. We've lost the freedom to think. What the intention of this spiritual teaching is to bring the human beings of Earth unity, peace, concord, knowledge, wisdom, love, freedom, harmony. Because everything in the universe is one, and it's all bound together. The Meyer teaching tells us that there is a universal intelligence. It's a neutral, positive, spiritual energy, and it permeates all things, this spiritual energy. The universal consciousness, though, is neither good nor evil. It's not a father figure. It's not here to rescue you. In fact, the whole purpose of physical life like this is learning responsibility and self-responsibility and being independent in our thinking. Now, we get help. Don't get me wrong. We're not left down here without help, but it comes in ways that we have to learn to recognize. Like, we all have a spirit form within us. The spirit form of most Earth humans is about 4 million years old. It resides in an area called the superior colliculus, the area of your middle brain that controls sight. Your spirit form is your inner nature, and it will impulse you. It will give you impulses that you need to learn to kind of hunches, that you'll learn to feel, and you'll learn to follow. The other thing that happens is within your subconscious, you have the level of evolution of your previous life. So probably for the first 50 years of your life, your subconscious was also impulsing you with information. See, we have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. And our spiritual consciousness is really resides around the spirit form. The material consciousness is your conscious mind, your subconscious mind, your unconscious mind, your personality. And this is who you are in this lifetime. The spiritual consciousness is the force, the energy, the power, the intelligence associated with you and your entire spiritual lineage. You have, if you're a typical spirit form on the earth, you have had many, many lifetimes. You've been here on the earth at least 4 to 5 million years. And our material consciousness is new each lifetime. We get a new personality, a new conscious mind. Now, in our subconscious is the level of evolution of our previous lifetime. So reincarnation is a cycle that goes on. And it's a cycle that you can observe in nature, especially with plants that come back. You know, the trees kind of go dormant in the winter, and then they come back with their life and health and vibrance in the summer. That's kind of a symbol of reincarnation. But I think the most obvious thing is the plants that are gone in the winter and then they come back, you know, those bushes particularly. We have a ton of them here. And they just grow right back. Now, there is a spiritual intelligence, a consciousness associated with everything that lives, plants, animals. And there's a great passage in the Goblet of Truth called What the Truth Knows to Say. And it says, rivers, stones, plants, animals, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And death is just the passage into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected together and they're aware of each other. They're connected by these swinging waves. And the swinging waves is a power that comes from our spiritual consciousness. You can kind of see it in nature when the birds move as a unit on the dime instantly at a high rate of speed. So all of the universe, there's this one passage that says, however, the oneness and the connectedness with all and everything is the result of the might and the immeasurable love of creation, which gives everything selflessly and demands no payment for it. So love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love. And we come up against the all-embracing love of creation, but a lot of times we don't recognize it. We don't understand what we're feeling here. You know, Billy, when he was a very young boy growing up in northern Switzerland, he would often look up at the stars at night, and he recognized the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, the light of true love is something that remains invisible for all great time. And love has a basis in reality, not belief. And few people would disagree that if there was more love in the world, it would be a better place. However, Billy explains that love is essential for evolution in life, and without love, nothing would be created. Nothing that exists would exist if it were not for the love of creation. And there is such a thing called wisdom conditioned love, and it's a harmonious state of absolute connectedness in all things. It's indestructible. It has no temporal limits. So we need to learn about love. Love is the absolute certainty that one co-lives and coexists in everything. Thus, in all which exists, the fauna and the flora, one's fellow human beings, in each and every material and spiritual life form, regardless of its kind, within the existence of the entire universe and beyond. And genuine love develops in the human being according to the ratio of his intelligence, his reason, his morality, and this real love slowly starts to grow. Now, Billy talks again, I was mentioning about these swinging waves, the schwinging waves. These are associated with this fine spiritual perception of love. And these swinging waves, they're not limited. They're not obstructed by objects. And there's no, these waves, they radiate through everything, either natural or material. They do not lose any speed whatsoever. This is absolutely fascinating. Listen to what this is saying. These waves, these swinging waves, associated with a fine spiritual perception of love, they're neither limited nor obstructed by any objects. Those individuals generating and receiving this love, these waves radiate through everything, either material or immaterial, without losing speed. This is one of the most incredible things you can do for your fellow man, is just sending out these thoughts and feelings of love. And we're not talking about anything sappy here. These swinging waves, they travel at 107,000 times the speed of light. They never lose speed. They never lose intensity. Now, the love that I'm talking about is effective love. And there's a love that's not effective. It's affective. It's temporary love. That's romantic love. The origin of true love, we must remember, is also connected to the creation. And Semyasi said, wisdom and love go together. Creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. And Billy says, in love, the human being is like a grain which is thrashed, sieved and freed from the chaff in order to meatly ground into meal and kneaded into supple, after which the control fire raises the leavening and bakes a loaf of bread, which is a work of love, nourishes all. Let me read to you what Billy says here. And it is the human being's obligation to experience and make useful this true love for himself or herself, as well as for her fellow human beings, to perceive this love and to feel its warmth, its peace, its happiness, and its joy. And only in the human being who is able to glimpse the connecting light of true love and perceive it within himself or herself, and who never allows the glow of the fire of true love to become old, and allows the flame of pure love to flare up to new brightness and warmth in order to progress along life's way by means of true love. Is the purpose of life fulfilled as well as life itself in all its nuances? So remember, love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. There's an absolute logic to creation. So let me read a little bit more about what true love is. Love, therefore, is the absolute knowledge and feeling, the absolute perception and empathy, in its communion and original form with all existing life and all the entire universal forms and beyond. In the absolute wisdom of this, that one's own existence is also a part existence of every other existing life form, which is, however, just as much a fragment of one's own existence, and that collectively, entirely, entire universal life forms only therefore exist because this is so. Love, human of the earth, is the first and the last law of all being, therefore of life altogether. Without love, no creation may form, and without love, no transformation can be completed. Love is required for all changes of life, for being and not being, for light and darkness, for the coming and the passing away, for life and death, for everything and everything, and for everything in the existence altogether. Love, therefore, is the absolute wise comprehension, understanding, cognition, knowledge, ability, mastering, and logic, and certainty, as well as the feelings and the feeling, and the absolute perception of one's own co-life in the life of the neighbor and in all else that exists, as a factor of communion in original form with all existing life and all entire universal forms and beyond. In the absolute wisdom of this, that one's own existence is also a part existence of any other existing life form, which is, however, just as exactly a fragment of one's own existence, and that collectively the entire universal life forms of every kind and form only exist because it truly is so, that everything and anything is bound together in love and forms one universal oneness. So everything in the universe is one, and it's all bound together. And love is the starting to understand that this is so and this is true. So we have one of the biggest challenges that we face as human beings is the controlling of our thoughts, and one of the biggest problem-solving things I've found is enthusiasm. All righteous evolutive enthusiasm gives the life an unexpected power and enables the human being to lead an existence which is successful in all areas. And the human being who lives with this enthusiasm feels raised into evolutive heights every moment by the power of his or her joy, love, freedom, and harmony. Because the enthusiasm is really able to create this power and thereby do things which extend far beyond that which is monotonous and mundane. The immense power of enthusiasm also creates the immense power of the thoughts through which all conceived ideas and things relating to imaginings and strivings and to wishes are fulfilled. Therefore, may the human being create in himself or herself enthusiasm, which is evolutive in a creational-based life form. in order to go through the world and the life with it and live by it. It is recommended to every human being that he or she nurtures his or her daily cheery enthusiasm, and that in it, in every moment, he or she practices finding life beautiful and worth living. It is recommended, together with nurturing all other neutral, positive, equalized thoughts and impulsations, as well as imaginations, wishes, ideas, and efforts of a righteous kind and wise, which are to be brought to fruition by the might of the thoughts. And every human being shall be thankful every day for the prosperity which comes to him and her or her, which is achieved by him or her, and for all abundance. And therefore, may the human being possess so much knowledge and be so wise, which does not have to be in great philosophical forms, that he or she creates the habit of and quality of having happy, glad, loving, and progressive thoughts, which are nurtured with enthusiasm. In this form, the human being shall do whatever he or she can do in order to make himself, as well as others, happy. This is a formula for true joy and enthusiasm, and therefore a formula which always pays off in some neutral, positive, equalized form. That's page 328 of my version of The Might of Thoughts. So Billy is a very interesting man. He's about 80 years old. He's written over 40 books. I thought I heard him say in an interview the other day that he's written over 50. That's just incredible. So he's this incredibly prolific author. Now, when Sloth, his first extraterrestrial mentor, met with him back, 75 years ago, one of the reasons that Sloth met with him is because these human beings are at much, much higher level of evolvement than we are. And they have the ability to track spirit forms and identify spirit forms. We erroneously use the term soul, but we have spirit forms, a fragment of the universal consciousness that's stored, that comes into the center of our middle brain 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. And they saw this spirit form come into this fetus, and they knew that it had been a prophet and a teacher for the last six of its lifetimes. It had been seven what we call important prophets, seven really important prophets. It had been the people that we call Enoch, Eliah, Isaiah, Yeremia, Emmanuel, Muhammad. Now, these people we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught the teaching of the Spirit. Now, there's so much controversy with the Meyer material, and I'm the most uncontroversial person. I find it very strange that this material in some ways has appealed to me so much. Who was Emmanuel? Emmanuel was a prophet 2,000 years ago, and he attempted to spread the spiritual teachings in Israel. And he wasn't called this until about 1600, roughly. He was started in around 1600 to be called Jesus. There really was no J in the ancient world. There was the Y and the I. So some biblical scholars will call him Yeshua. Some will call him Jesus. If you look in the Latin, he's often depicted as IESUS or IESVS. In fact, in the first King James 1611 version, it says, our Lord and Savior, IESVS. So I just want to let you know that our history has really been switched and changed, and especially our writings. The other person that I talked about was Enoch. Well, the Meyer material refers to him as Henoch, and he was born around 9,308 BC, and he wrote something called the Henoch Prophecies. There were actually multiple Henochs. The Henoch Prophecies talk about worldwide natural catastrophes and the destruction of North America. These are possible destructions. And I'm optimistic that this tremendous spiritual transition that's taking place is going to stop these from happening. Destruction in America, what does it say? Far in the West, it will be different. The United States will be a country of total destruction. Well, I hope the people listening to this program will do their best to control their thoughts, to learn these spiritual principles like love, so that the United States of America doesn't descend into total destruction. What else did the Henoch prophecies say? It says, this cause is manifold. Her global conflicts, which are continuously instigated by her and which will continue far into the future. America is creating an enormous hatred against her worldwide in many countries. And I think we need to resist this as a public. We need to resist our involvement in all of these wars. This is not a good thing. This is what is causing much of our trouble. There is no justification for all of the warfare that our country has been involved in. And it's causing a destabilizing effect. What we want is the stabilizing effect that comes from understanding the creation and understanding these creational natural laws. One of the most important creational natural laws is the law of striving. And striving is talked about in the book called The Way to Live. And I think I can find this. Maybe. Right here on page 102, it says, striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation, which is a kind of satisfaction in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction, when you start to experience affliction in your life, this is because you've had inhibited striving. Inhibited striving, inhibited life will bring you into inhibited evolution and stagnation. It will also cause a hopelessness, a grief. So I always say, man, if you're falling into grief and hopelessness, get working on something. You got to find something. Yeah, you might be unemployed right now, but you got to find something to work on. And no matter what it is, your happiness in life depends on you continue in your striving and focus on your striving and listen to those impulses coming from your subconscious, because that will guide you into your area of striving. There's a great problem with addiction today, and I think that's because people are not aware of this creational natural law. You can't get around the creational natural laws. Striving is an absolute must. Continue to strive and work. Whatever your work, you know, your homework, whatever your work is. There's areas in many areas in life. If you don't strive, your evolution will stagnate. See, we're kind of programmed to evolve. And if you're not fulfilling these creational natural laws, you'll have hopelessness, grief, confusion. You have irrationality, joylessness, cognitionlessness, unpeace, disharmony. You'll have resentment. You won't have love in your life. You'll have self-deceit. And you'll have the reluctance for life. And really, the strength of your desire to strive is really the strength of your life. So you have to stay focused on striving. Striving is your sense of life and your evolution. And your evolution is also tied to your understanding of creation. Now, our universe was created 46 trillion years ago. The Meyer material refers to it as the DERN universe, the DERN universe. All our universe you could think of as these belts, these concentric circles. Like, you know, if you cut a tree down, you can see the growth rings. Well, that's one of these repeating patterns of nature. Our universe has seven belts, and they counter-rotate. And the fourth belt contains all the matter in the universe, all the galaxies and all the stars and all the solar systems. Now, this material belt, this fourth belt, is also divided into seven layers or seven dimensions or seven time planes. And you will see kind of a variation in each one of these universes, for lack of a better word. That's the material part of our universe. So the Pleiaren are from another dimension, another time plane. It's not weirdness. See, religion has these weird notions like there's this other dimension out there and there's boogeymen living in this dimension and it's all strange. No, there's stars, there's planets, there's galaxies, there's people. Now, one of the differences in the dimension of the Pleiaren is in their dimension, the stars and the planets are a bit closer together. And there are a lot more civilizations that are close together. You know, in our space-time plane, you might have to travel 12 light years to find another planet that has a human civilization on it. But not so in the Pleiaren's time plane. They traveled to their planet 230,000 years ago. Their ancestors came from Lyra Vega. Now, this is a Lyra Vega in a different time plane than our world. So, and there was a great war in Lyra Vega at that time. And there were these kings of wisdom. And some of these kings of wisdom were not as advanced in the spiritual teachings as they should have been. So they started to abuse the powers of their material consciousness. And one of these kings of wisdom, which escaped and left, probably to save his own life and to save others from these wars, was a guy named Asael. And he left the Lyra Vega system and he went to this world called Era, which isn't in the Pleiades, by the way. It's in the Pleiaren star system. And they settled on this world called Era. And after Pelagon died, his daughter took over, Pleia, and she started exploring again. And they knew of this comet that they call the Destroyer Comet, which, by the way, is 1.72 times the size of the Earth. It's almost double the size of the Earth. And somehow this comet travels through solar systems and lays planets to waste at times. And it used to come through our solar system here on the Earth, and somehow it actually travels through these time planes. I don't know how. That's never been explained in the Meyer material. But Pleiades people were following behind this destroyer comet because they had seen rubble in the back of this destroyer comet, and rubble from their own world. And they followed it into our system, and they decided to explore Earth at that time. And they came to the Earth, and they saw mostly dark-skinned people, but some light-skinned people. And they recognized the Lyrian spirit forms. Remember, not the soul. There is no such thing so per se as the soul. But the spirit form resides in the center of the middle brain. And even way back in ancient times, these extraterrestrials could recognize these Lyrian spirit forms. Now, these are people who had came to the Earth 389,000 years from today, and they had kind of abused some of the Earth peoples, and they got stranded here on the Earth. Their technologies were taken away. So the history of the Earth is very convoluted, and that's why we've had such a hard time. And it's even just now that we're starting to really understand what has happened in our history. Because we have a very, very interesting history on the Earth. And that's why all these people are saying, hey, look at this great pyramid. We can't build this today. It takes incredible skill to put this together in engineering, and we don't have this kind of knowledge. We don't have this kind of background. And they recognize that there was water and weathering on the Sphinx, and that the Earth is much, much more ancient than we've been told. So you have a very ancient spirit form. It's possible that you could be one of these older spirit forms who has, you know, maybe you came here during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria 130,000 years ago. Maybe you died and reincarnated, and you're deep within your subconscious is the memories of your previous life. You know, we don't really, and it's for a good thing generally, remember our previous life, because it would be a very difficult thing to try to deal with all of the challenges that have happened to you in the past, all the people and animals that have you loved and lost over the years. So it's a real blessing by creation that this level of evolution that we don't remember these things, because it would be too much for us to deal with. And we have enough challenge as it is controlling our thoughts and the power of our thoughts. And really, what we think is what we become. And let me read a little section from the book, The Psyche. It talks about the power of the thoughts. Every human being who occupies their thoughts extensively with one matter sooner or later falls prey to it. For better or for worse, if distinct imaginings or wishes are persistently cultivated over a long period of time, then the corresponding deed or fulfillment of the wish will occur inevitably at that certain point in time, completely on its own and without special determinations of the will. It is exactly the same with the effects and the belief in any one religion. Only that here a holy figure, an empty phrase, or a frippery, or as is most common, a godhead, is decisive. The belief that God, a human being, is a representative, an object, or any formula is able to achieve a quite distinct effect. It allows this wished-for effect to become reality, an effect which in religious circles is referred to as a miracle and the like. Miracle is a term for something that the little knowing and unenlightened human being always uses for an event or other occurrence which he or she cannot explain the natural process themselves. However, no miracles exist in reality because everything is explainable according to the law of absolutely effective spirit. That spirit that has its distinct place within every human being and within everything in the whole of nature, a fact which unfortunately is unknown to the majority of the humankind, but on the other hand, which is suppressed by different religions, knowingly or unknowingly, whereby indeed the former is most likely the case. This because all broader thinking human beings are no longer in need of religious direction nor beliefs, since their own cognition allows them to recognize good and evil, that the human being in the natural consciousness alone is able to completely master and have free reign over everything, which makes them into autonomous and self-acting human beings. So the purpose of the spiritual teachings is to make you autonomous, to make you independent, not dependent. Religions make you dependent. You need to be independent in your thinking. And this is completely foreign to some people. Some people, they clamor for the government to tell them what reality is. You have the power to think independently. You need to use your own logic and your own reasoning to make your decisions. You're not a cattle. You're not a sheep. You're a human being. And you have the responsibility to think independently. You need to take charge of your own life. You are the master of your own destiny. You are not weak. You have the most powerful thoughts in the world. There is no other human being that has more powerful thoughts than you. Your consciousness is connected to the universal consciousness. But today, unfortunately, the actual decisions and deeds of every human being are only partially based on fully conscious considerations. The greatest part stems from that area which is withdrawn from the immediate influence of the will, which is the subconscious. Now, the subconscious is really interesting. We have an unconscious which processes things first. So if you touch a hot stove, your hand will pull back. That's your unconscious doing that. If you get information like I'm putting out right now, your unconscious is going to evaluate it quickly and say, oh, is this simple? We'll just pop it up to the conscious mind. Is this profound? Then we'll pop it down to the subconscious. So the subconscious can mull over it. The subconsciousness, the cerebellum of the unconscious, whatever one wants to call it, there in the most concealed and undecipherable depths of the brain, all actions and omissions are prepared. That which, to a large extent, determine the course of the life and destiny of life of the individual human being, that's all done in your subconscious. So remember, and a thing that which kind of floored me today while I was reading my thoughts is that we have unconscious evolution which occurs just like our conscious evolution. Nevertheless, nothing can be more misguided than the opinion that the human being has no influence over the whole course and direction of her life. It would be false to think that the human being is merely an active spectator in their destiny, driven only by all dark or illuminating powers and currents, on the basis that the individual is at the mercy of their heredity, education, and government. No, that's not true. You are the master of your own destiny. Good thinking leads to good feelings, which lead to good habits, which lead to good circumstances in your life. All circumstances of your life come out of your own thinking, pretty much all of them. you are responsible for your life. And you have the power to change your life if there are areas which are not going the way you would like them to go. Since precisely here the personal power of thoughts and the personal life attitude of each individual steps into action. This is page 88 of the Psyche, if you want to read this later, in my version anyway. Exactly here, the circumstance is useful for each human being that precisely this hidden source of his or her decisions, deeds, actions, and wishes. The subconscious. The conscious can even be enormously widely formed through absolutely conscious thinking. What the human being carries around within him or herself are imaginings. Now, imaginings are very important. Billy talks about this in The Might of Thoughts. And you need to have imaginings which are productive, which are good, and you should allow yourself to have those imaginings, those dreams, those hopes, because those imaginings bring reality into fruition. Every human being attracts and brings into fruition that which he secretly or consciously loves and strives for. What the human being carries around within him or herself as imaginings, thoughts, wishes, ideas, and fantasies, what he or she consciously nurtures in his or her thoughts sinks down very deeply into your unconscious. And from there forms their life, their mode of thinking, their personality, and their destiny. Okay, here's the challenge then. Here lies the implement for the imprinting and fulfillment of the life and the inner nature of the human being. In their character, their deeds, actions, and wishes, the human being portrays exactly the product of what and how she thinks or he thinks. He or she therefore embodies, in every case, the consciousness-based attitude, their powers, their cognitions, and their will. The cross-section of the thought world embodies the absolute certainty, precisely the cross-section of the course of life, namely, what a human being thinks will occur sooner or later. That's huge. That's worth a pause. Namely, what a human being thinks will occur sooner or later, since every thought is an unborn action, a nascent deed. The more often a thought is cultivated, and the more intensely it is tended to, the stronger it swells up and pushes unstoppably into realization. Just as the seed kernel swells through the steady moisture and germinates, takes root, grows, and then unfolds itself into an ear of corn. So your thoughts have incredible power. So monitor your thoughts, evaluate your thoughts. One thing that to see, if you have a negative feeling which comes over you, it probably started with a negative thought. So these are the thoughts you need to stop before they start to take over, because they're just like weeds. They'll take over and they'll spread. You want to nurture a beautiful garden that's filled with all sorts of plants, trees, you know, corn like we were talking, and tomatoes, and all these beautiful flowers and bushes. Your consciousness should be like the most beautiful garden, the most beautiful green garden that you can imagine. And these are the kinds of things that you want to have in your consciousness. What the human being has carried sufficiently long within their thoughts and totally unconsciously releases within them their real consciousness direction, which, like a perfect automatic mechanism, unfolds and brings into effect the corresponding decisions and actions according to their inner nature. Consequently, it is not of great significance for the course and success in the life which efforts are undertaken in a given case in order to tackle even tasks or achieve goals once set. Rather, it is of greater importance with which the mental attitude the life and task or goal are approached. So, it's more important, your mental attitude is more important than actually what the things you're doing right now. So you start by working on your mental attitude. And then the things that happen from a good mental attitude will be good. So you tell yourself, I'm optimistic. I'm confident. I'm cheerful. I'm enthusiastic. I'm relaxed. I'm thankful. All of these thoughts will propel you into a life where you're in control of your circumstances. Now, what can happen, just to warn you, is that you will have periods where you're striving a lot. You're really, really, really striving a lot, because that's the other evolutive law here, is the striving. The striving, the work that's involved, is of tremendous importance, because you are the master of your own destiny. Good thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good circumstances in your life. You'll develop good habits from your right mental attitude. You will start to recognize what makes you happy and what makes you strong and what makes you independent in your thinking. Because the evolution of your consciousness depends on the evolution of your thinking. And you need to observe your thoughts, nourish good, healthy thinking. Clarify your thoughts. Form boundaries around your thoughts. Identify the good thoughts, the better thoughts. Identify which thoughts are healthy for you. And think about those things. Clarify those things. Let those good thoughts enter into your mind, and then build a very healthy consciousness. And then through that healthy consciousness, you can take on life's challenges and life's problems. What I'm talking to you about are the spiritual teachings of Edward that are in the book called The Way to Live, The Might of Thoughts, and The Psyche. And these are the teachings that are going to bring in the second stage of enlightenment, the next stage of enlightenment for humanity, where we start to live according to the creational natural laws. Anyway, I hope you have a great day. I hope I get a chance to talk to you soon. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Talk to you later.